Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Drs. Foss and Chagpar welcome Dr. Robert Udelsman. Dr. Udelsman is William H. Carmalt Professor of Surgery, Surgeon-in-Chief for Yale New Haven Hospital, and Clinical Program Leader for the Endocrine Cancers Program at Smilow Cancer Hospital. Here's Francine Foss.
Let's start off by having you just introduce our audience to the whole area of endocrine cancer. What are the endocrine cancers, and what is your exact role in the cancer center?
Yes, well, thank you. So endocrine cancers can be broadly defined as any cancer of the endocrine system, which would include the thyroid, parathyroid, adrenal, as well as GI cancers of the gastrointestinal tract, as well as ovarian cancer, breast cancer, and cancers of the male gonad. But in fact, many of those areas of endocrine cancers are taken care of by specialists such as urologists or gynecologists or breast surgeons. So my area of expertise are the endocrine cancers, which include the thyroid gland, the parathyroid, and the adrenal.
And you lead the endocrine cancer program at the Cancer Center. Can you tell us how long we've had an endocrine cancer program?
I'm actually not sure of that. I can tell you that I've been here for roughly 12 years, and the endocrine cancer program really coincided with the development of the Smilow Cancer Hospital and the Cancer Center. So we've been around a while, although Smilow was relatively new.
So, Rob, let's talk a little bit about the endocrine cancers that you deal with primarily. So thyroid, parathyroid, and adrenal. How common are each of those?
Yeah. So by far the most common is thyroid cancer. There are roughly 45,000 new cases of thyroid cancer in the United States per year, whereas parathyroid cancers are so rare that in my entire career I've probably taken care of a maximum 20. And adrenal cancers, there's roughly about 300 new cases of adrenal cancers in the entire United States per year, although we have a particular interest in them. So when you're talking about endocrine cancers, for the most part, you're talking about thyroid cancer.
And Bob, before the program started, you told me that the incidence of thyroid cancer is rising and it's an epidemic. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's actually either scary at one hand or interesting on another, in that the most commonly or the most rapidly increasing cancer in the United States and certainly the state of Connecticut is thyroid cancer. And one has to ask the question, is this real? Is it a new cancer developing, or is it really a detection bias based upon our ability to detect very small thyroid cancers?
So tell us a little bit more about thyroid cancer. What are the risk factors for thyroid cancer? How does one get it? How does one pick it up? And how is it detected?
So let me start serially by answering your questions. First, what are the risk factors? Well, there are certain clear risk factors, such as genetics, that there are certain families in which thyroid cancers occur based upon a genetic predisposition. This is particularly true in medullary cancer of the thyroid, which is, in fact, a relatively rare cancer, but there are certain families that we follow that clearly have risk factors based upon genetic traits. In the state of Connecticut, there's actually an interesting incidence of papillary thyroid cancer, which is not as common as far as the genetic traits are concerned, but papillary thyroid cancer is actually the most common of all of the thyroid cancers, although the vast majority have nothing to do with genes, at least as best as we can determine. And finally, there are other rare cancers as well that may have genetic predispositions, but they're so unusual. By far and away, the really big topic, which I mean is 95%, are thyroid nodules. And thyroid nodules are actually very common in the U.S. population. In fact, 15% of women in the United States have thyroid nodules. And another interesting thing about thyroid nodules and thyroid cancers is they're three times more common in women than they are in men.
Can you talk about the age of onset of thyroid cancer and whether that is, in fact, is changing?
Well, first of all, there's a clear incidence that the older you are, the more likely you are to have a thyroid cancer. And that is picking up. But the fact of the matter is children have thyroid cancers as well. We're actually particularly interested in children with thyroid cancers because there are dramatic effects upon the management of these tumors by the experience of the individuals taking care of them. We have a particular interest in children with thyroid cancer. And I myself, my career is actually evolving that I'm getting more involved in children in many ways, and it's technically interesting and challenging to manage these kids with thyroid cancers.
How young
Oh, you can see them in utero, in fact. So, in fact, patients with genetic abnormalities such as MEN2B actually probably develop their cancers in utero, and so we basically try to diagnose them shortly after birth.
So, Rob, I want to go back to this epidemic. Because one of the things that you said was, we don't really know why this is. It may just be that we're picking more of these up. It may be a detection issue. We talked a little bit about thyroid nodules. So is that how people find these? They go for their usual yearly physical exam and their doctor feels their neck and says, my gosh, you've got a thyroid nodule, and away we go?
You're exactly right. Everything you just said is completely on board. The fact is that we're doing so many diagnostic screening tests, such as ultrasounds of the neck, for instance, during carotid artery screening, and we find these incidental thyroid cancers. The fact is, many of these incidental thyroid cancers or thyroid nodules are less than a centimeter in size. And people are putting needles into these tiny little nodules, and many of those tiny little nodules prove to be thyroid cancers. So the surgeon is posed with a problem: is what do you do with an incidentaloma of the thyroid gland, a tiny, tiny thyroid nodule that someone biopsied and, in fact, may actually be a thyroid cancer? It's very hard for most people not to intervene.
In the past, most of the thyroid cancers were picked up because they were actually palpated as a mass.
That's true. And now we're picking them up because of these imaging studies. It's actually quite interesting that the management of thyroid cancer varies dramatically depending where you live, both in the United States, but particularly internationally. One of our colleagues in Japan who will be visiting us soon have following a population of biopsy-proven sub-centimeter thyroid cancers non-operatively. That is, they know they have thyroid cancers. Under the microscope, it's unequivocal. These are thyroid cancers. And yet they're following these patients non-operatively for up to 10 years of time. And most of these patients, that is roughly two-thirds, don't appear to require surgical intervention.
And we don't know in patients who present with the lumps, we don't know how long those cancers may have been sitting there.
That's true, too. Our guess is that the average patient that we see with a biopsy-proven thyroid cancer probably has had that nodule for at least 5 years. That's based upon doubling times of tumors and the epidemiology. But the truth of the matter is, I think we need to really settle down the public a little bit, that if you have a thyroid nodule, it needs to be evaluated, but you probably don't have a thyroid cancer. And even if you do have a thyroid cancer, the odds of that thyroid cancer shortening your lifespan are actually quite small. The vast majority of patients with thyroid cancer will live a normal lifespan. The issue is not so much cancer demise, but disease recurrence and the effect that this disease recurrence will have upon them.
So, Rob, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about a conversation that we had here on Yale Cancer Center Answers with Pete Shulam about prostate cancer, and it sounds very much like the same, that you may have a cancer, but if it's small or low grade, that perhaps it really doesn't need anything further to be treated.
Like prostate cancer, thyroid cancer is complicated. So unlike prostate cancer, where there is clear Gleason scales and an ability to predict which of those tumors are likely to cause trouble, in thyroid, we're not quite as good. So the garden variety papillary thyroid cancer, which is the most common type, we really can't discriminate between the one that's going to be aggressive and cause serious troubles and the one that's probably indolent and could be left alone. We just don't have the ability. Although recently there have been a series of molecular markers, particularly something called BRAF, which is a molecular marker of aggressiveness, and for the most part, there's a correlation between the presence of this BRAF mutation and the aggressiveness of the tumor, although even there, more studies need to be done to really understand that.
So, Rob, just to clarify for the audience, are we absolutely certain that we can make a clear-cut diagnosis of thyroid cancer when somebody presents with one of these small nodules? How certain can we be that it's benign or malignant on either side of the spectrum?
Yeah, and this is where we're really dependent upon our colleagues in cytology. So the standard workup of a thyroid nodule is a carefully performed history and physical exam in all patients. But once you document a thyroid nodule, the next step is usually an ultrasound examination. And ultrasounds are completely safe. There's no radiation involved and very accurate. So we have a wonderful diagnostic study, perhaps too accurate. The next step would be a fine needle aspiration cytology examination. That is, under ultrasound guidance, usually one puts a small, tiny needle into these nodules and then looks at the cytologic features. Cytologists are exquisitely accurate in a subset if they're well-trained cytologists. Unfortunately, many cytologists are not. That is, what they really are in many hospitals in many locations are pathologists who kind of do cytology as an avocation that is on the side. You need a really well-trained cytologist because cytology is more of an art form than it is a science. That is, it's the eye of the observer of the quality of the cytopathologist looking under the microscope at these lesions. However, when a well-trained cytologist makes the diagnosis of cancer, the accuracy of that is about 99.9%. So you can pretty much take it to the bank that when they call it a cancer, it is. However, in some subsets of patients, and at no fault of the cytologist, the cytologic details are just not there. And the best they can do is say, yes, it's an indeterminate nodule or a worrisome lesion that will need further diagnostic studies. And it's not that they're not good. It's just that the information isn't there under the microscope.
And so, Rob, when you have a really good cytologist and the cytologist says this is cancer, I'm thinking back to your friend from Japan who is following the sub-centimeter papillary thyroid cancers. If we don't have a good score, like a Gleason score, and BRAF may or may not be the holy grail, you know, there are people who are listening to us at Sunday night and they're listening to NPR and they're thinking, my God, but how can they follow a cancer when they don't know that this is a cancer that isn't going to kill me and this is a cancer that is?
So it's a wonderful question and a complex paradigm, and it's where you really need to work with people who have a lot of insight. You know, it's very easy to intervene on every patient. Surgeons love to operate. They operate, they cure the patient, and everybody's happy. However, the treatment should not be worse than the disease. So if we talk about epidemiologic studies, and we look at certain countries where you go to routine autopsy and you do microsectioning, that is very careful sectionings through thyroid glands of patients who died from non-thyroid-related causes, the fact of the matter is in up to 35% of patients, or even higher, you'll find subclinical incidental thyroid cancers. And Lord knows that the majority of these patients would not have benefited from surgical intervention. That's where this balance thing comes in. When do you intervene and when do you follow?
But in the United States, it sounds like we tend to more to intervene and to operate on these things rather than to observe them.
It's absolutely right. The average American has a real hard time knowing they have a biopsy-proven thyroid cancer, or for them at any cancer, and being followed non-operatively. But in reality, that's not an unreasonable paradigm for a subset of patients. What you need to do is find yourself in the hands of an expert in managing these problems.
So tell us about what that follow-up would be like. Because certainly, you know, it's fine to say, well, you've got a small papillary thyroid cancer. This is likely not going to kill you, but we don't really have a good differentiator. You're a world-renowned thyroid expert, but you're going to follow that patient. Tell us about what that follow-up is like so that the patient has some reassurance that when this thyroid cancer, if it is going to be an aggressive thyroid cancer that will do something bad, is going to do that, that it's going to be picked up.
Well, first of all, I think it's fair to say that in the United States and for the most part the world, the standard treatment of biopsy-proven thyroid cancer is surgical intervention. That's where we are right now. Now, I do know that the NIH is starting to organize consensus groups and, in fact, treatment groups, and I'm actually part of that, to say maybe there's a subset of patients who should not or would benefit from non-operative intervention. However, those trials have not been initiated in the United States, and as the gold standard in all trials are randomized prospective trials. It's difficult to do that at single institutions because the numbers would have to be great on something that we would call a power analysis, that is, the ability to predict what's the population of patients required to answer the question in a safe manner. I actually believe those trials will get started eventually. I've actually been involved in such trials, in designing such trials. I'm actually the guy who said we should do the trial in thyroid cancer. However, in thyroid cancer, there are many other questions, such as whether or not one should routinely remove lymph nodes, for instance, in the what we call the central neck. And where our group, actually the first author of that study is Tobias Carling, and I'm the senior author, demonstrated that because the power analysis predicted that the size of the population would literally be in the thousands, that this trial should never be done because it's just not possible. Unfortunately, many people do trials that are underpowered. That is, they don't have enough patients in the population to answer these important questions. And they go down the garden pathway of saying, yeah, the trial shows no significant difference, but there are not enough patients in the studies.
Well, we're going to talk more about trials and thyroid cancer right after we take a short break for a medical minute.
It's estimated that nearly 200,000 men in the U.S. will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year, and 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from the disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, prostate cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. The Da Vinci robotic surgical system is an option available for patients at Yale that uses 3D imaging to enable the surgeon to perform a prostatectomy without the need for a large incision. This has been a Medical Minute. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Utelsman. We're discussing thyroid cancer in particular, endocrine cancers as a global topic. And right before the break, Rob, we were talking about the treatment of thyroid cancer, and I thought we'd go back to that. So often on this show, we talk about the treatment of various malignancies, and it's really a team approach. Is the same thing true in thyroid cancer?
Yeah, there couldn't be a better example of a team approach than in thyroid cancer, because we as surgeons are just one small piece of a much bigger equation. We rely upon our colleagues in endocrinology, cytopathology, pathology, nuclear medicine, ultrasonography, advanced axial imaging, including CT and MRI. There's just so much involved, and it's why patients so benefit from coming to a place that has this whole team approach to the treatment of cancers. And it's not just Yale or MD Anderson or Sloan Kettering. All of these institutions have put together these team approaches to the treatment of cancers. And not just cancers, but the diagnosis of cancers. And every part of that equation is critical.
Can you tell us, Bob, if you have a nodule and you come in to the clinic, say like you come to the Smilow Cancer Center, who do you see first? And how many patients actually end up seeing the surgeon?
Yeah, the vast majority of patients with thyroid nodules will never see a thyroid surgeon and shouldn't. The way the screening process works in the United States is the majority are managed by endocrinologists, exquisitely well-trained endocrinologists. And if they have a thyroid nodule, they're likely to be referred to an ultrasonographer, and the ultrasonographer will obtain a biopsy, and the specimen will be sent to a cytopathologist to review the biopsy results. That alone will screen out the majority of patients who don't need intervention, because the majority of thyroid nodules have no indication of malignancy.
So by the time a patient sees you, they've been through all of that, and it's been determined that they need surgery. So how do you approach a patient like that?
Yeah. What do you tell them? Or may need surgery. A legitimate cause of referral to a surgeon is for a conversation about whether or not surgical intervention is appropriate, and then, if so, what the appropriate intervention is. I'd like to emphasize, again, basic principles that every patient who gets referred to either an endocrinologist or a surgeon needs a well-performed history and physical examination to think about not just the primary tumor, but other risk factors. For instance, if they have underlying cardiovascular disease, how would that affect their disease management?
So, Rob, let's say that they've been through the screening process, they've had a biopsy, it shows thyroid cancer, you see them. Tell us a little bit more about what the surgery is or what the surgical options are, what the side effects of that surgery are, and how other team players may affect that therapy as well.
Yeah. So biopsy-proven thyroid cancers once used to be a controversial topic about whether one should do a lobectomy or a total thyroidectomy. for the most part, our societal groups, including the American Thyroid Association, has recommended, for the most part, a total thyroidectomy for most well-differentiated thyroid cancers. There's still a subset of patients who might benefit from a lobectomy or a partial removal of the thyroid gland, but most people would agree that a total thyroidectomy is the treatment of choice for thyroid cancer. It gets controversial when we start to get into the lymph nodes and whether one should do a lymph node dissection, at least in the central neck, for the majority of patients. Nonetheless, we do believe that ultrasound screening of both the central and particularly what we call the lateral neck, or the area of the neck outside or lateral to the carotid arteries, should be performed in all patients. And we and the American Thyroid Association believe that that's appropriate in virtually all patients.
Can you talk about how important it is from a patient's point of view to know that their surgeon has done a lot of these cases? Is this technically a difficult operation to do? And is this an area where expertise is really an important thing that patients should be looking for?
You know, it's like all things. It's like a plumber or an electrician. In the majority of cases, your average trained electrician or plumber can do a perfectly fine job. However, one can't predict when in the operating room one's going to run into a problem. And when you run into a problem, having a well-trained expert is so beneficial to the patient. And there are well-performed data to suggest that those with experience have better results as far as decreased complication rates and, in fact, decreased expenses to both the patient and to the institution. So this is an area where experience really does count.
So let's get back to what potential complications there are with thyroid surgery.
It's like real estate. It's location, location, and location. The truth of the matter is removing the thyroid gland in itself is not a technically difficult tour de force. What is difficult is to remove the thyroid gland adequately and at the same time not to remove or harm proximal structures such as the nerves to the vocal cords that control your voice or the parathyroid glands, so-called, because they live next to the thyroid gland. And in this case, the parathyroid glands control calcium homeostasis, and removing or injuring the parathyroid glands can result in long-term problems such as low calcium levels, low parathyroid hormone levels, and bone disease in the long run.
So if a patient successfully goes through the surgery, can you tell us how long it takes to recover and what the patient will experience during that recovery?
Yeah, this is actually a nice thing because in many cases, the surgery may be harder on the surgeon than it is on the patient. Because this patient comes in the morning, for the most part, has an operation, and almost always go home the very next day. And they actually feel pretty good. Because in almost all circumstances, we don't cut any major muscles. And anesthesia management these days is so exquisitely good, it's so unusual to have an anesthetic complication. So the complications are almost all technical in nature and surgeon or procedure related.
So, Rob, you know, for many cancers, we talk about additional therapies that may be needed, chemotherapy, radiation therapy. What are the adjuvant therapies that are needed for patients with thyroid cancer?
Well, for the most part, thyroid cancer, at least well-differentiated thyroid cancer, is treated with radioactive iodine in the majority of patients. This is such a wonderful thing, though. Just imagine if we had a magic bullet that could clearly hone on to disease treatment in the majority of patients, and we have such a treatment with a very high specific and therapeutic ratio in thyroid cancer, because thyroid hormone is based upon iodine. Iodine is the backbone of thyroid hormone, and we have the advantage of taking iodine and making it radioactive and then giving the patient a procedure, a liquid to drink or to swallow that hones in on the cancer and does very little harm to associated structures. In contradistinction to other treatments such as external beam radiotherapy, which will kill rapidly dividing cells, but unfortunately have significant toxic effects upon all cells that are in the pathway of the radio beam. And yet we can still give external beam radiotherapy for cancers because our talented physicians can hone and tailor those beams relatively selectively to minimize trauma to associated structures.
So do all patients need the radioactive iodine therapy?
No. There are a subset of patients who have such well-differentiated and small cancers that they probably don't even benefit from radioactive iodine therapy. However, because the toxicity of radioactive iodine is so low, we tend to have a relatively low ratio or threshold for giving it to many patients.
So, Rob, one of the nice things, I mean, clearly one of the nice things about the thyroid is that you do have this magic bullet. It's one of the few organs that has that. But another thing that's nice about endocrine organs in general is that they make hormones, hence they're called endocrine. How do you utilize that fact in the treatment of thyroid cancers?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. So in addition to just having this wonderful therapeutic treatment with radioactive iodine, it turns out that most endocrine tumors are under hormone control. And there are good scientific data to show that the pituitary gland secretes a hormone called TSH, thyroid tropin or thyroid stimulating hormone. And if we suppress that, we can decrease the growth and spread of cancer. So in virtually all patients with thyroid cancer, we administered thyroid hormone to suppress the secretion of TSH by the pituitary gland, and this will result in decreased tumor growth or spread.
Is this a lifelong therapy for the patient?
It is indeed, for two reasons. First of all, if we remove the thyroid gland, we have to give thyroid hormone or the patient will have a very bad outcome and, in fact, die eventually of hypothyroidism. Furthermore, patients don't like being hypothyroid, so it's very easy to convince them to take their thyroid hormone because otherwise they just won't feel well. Unlike other drugs, hypertensive drugs or other drugs that make you feel bad, thyroid hormone makes you feel good. The danger being that there is the temptation to take too much, and patients have this concept sometimes that they can decrease their weight or have more energy by taking too much thyroid hormone, which in itself, thyroid hormone is not a technique for weight loss.
Darn.
Right.
So tell me, Rob, it sounds like we've got some really great therapies for thyroid cancer. How do people with thyroid cancer do? What are their outcomes like?
Yeah, the overwhelming outcome, and I would say 90 to 95% of patients with well-differentiated thyroid cancer is long-term survival. That is, the disease will not decrease their lifespan. However, all patients are at risk for recurrence, and up to 15% of patients will have recurrence. Recurrence as manifest by recurrent disease in the central or lateral neck in the lymph nodes will result in intervention, and intervention in itself can have complications or morbidity associated with it. So the goal is to minimize prevention or to treat prevention and to minimize complications.
Do patients go back for surgery again if they have a recurrence?
Well, the next step would be to stage them, and if they have localized recurrence in the lymph nodes, the answer is the least toxic form of long-term treatment is redo surgery. Now, we now have an era where we are now detecting recurrence in these tiny little nodules, and yet we have to ask, is surgical intervention the ideal treatment for these patients? And we have this discussion on a routine basis.
Dr. Robert Udelsman is William H. Carmalt Professor of Surgery, Surgeon-in-Chief for Yale New Haven Hospital, and Clinical Program Leader for the Endocrine Cancers Program at Smilow Cancer Hospital. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.